Did you leave me a secret message for me to find later?
I was on the spot. I couldn't think of anything to say.
That's perfect.
One of the other things that you said.
Welcome to part two of my conversation with Lexi Braun. Now that Lexi's done with her carrots, we continue. Stick around at the end of the episode to hear one of Lexi's original songs, The Moon. Thanks for being here. Enjoy.
It's weird to be having a conversation with, like, a friend that I feel... I was talking about this earlier before we hit record. A friend that I feel so, like, I can be my full unhinged self with.
Yeah.
And that's only because of you specifically and, like, the permission, again, that you give, I think, everybody. I don't think I'm different in that. But then recording it for just any, like, literally anybody can click on it and listen. And it's like, oh, this isn't for you.
It is weird.
But it is. It's for all of you, whoever you are.
It is weird. And I was just talking about this, actually. I can't remember who I was talking about this with, but I think it was with Audrey. I was just recognizing that, like, I'm pretty, I can be a pretty intense person. I have, like, a real desire to be as authentic as possible all the time. And it's not because, like, I'm a good person. It's just because it's the only thing that, like, I feel like, it's not even comfortable. I can't use that word. It's the only thing that I feel as though is a metric that is constant for me. If I just choose to always be as straightforward as possible and blunt if I need to be, or, you know, like, just honest, then I don't have to, like, go through the mechanism or the machinations of, like, crafting a story or keeping up with one lie and going with the next one or whatever it is. And that does cause tension. It does cause conflict in my life, but at least I can handle it because it's based on me just being honest and me being real. But part of that, I get the chance sometimes to, like, hold back and, like, just be quiet and not say things, or to, you know, different people bring out different parts mm-hmm. of me. And so doing this podcast, and especially after, you know, at the point of this conversation, I put out two episodes, and just getting feedback from people who I didn't think about when I, you know, some people who have reached out, I didn't think about them listening to it. And some people who have listened, I'm pretty surprised that they listened. I kind of thought, like, they don't give a shit about.
Well, we're so used to being able to carefully craft our image for a certain audience.
Right.
And it's like, oh, I know my algorithm. I know who's out there. Right. And it's like, there's something so beautiful about, like, I have to just be 100% me and put this thing out there that I believe in and not think about who is and who isn't going to take it up.
Well, and that's so, and you're like touching on the my point here, which is that, like, since I've done this, I've come to a conclusion about it, and I realized that I'm doing this with my guests as well. Like, I want to talk to you because I think you've got nothing to apologize for. You've got nothing to, like, hold back for. I, like you said, like, we've shared
recently,
as far as I know, but I really do believe,
I know what you mean.
like, I haven't been close with you for a really long time. You know, I would say that we've been close and vulnerable with each other for, like, the last couple of years. But, like, no matter what it is that you've got in your past or whatever it is that you do in the future, like, I know you now. Like, I get it, you know? I don't think obviously there's some, like, I'm sure there are some limitations to this, you know, but I feel as though I get, like, I see that you are like a kind and loving person who is struggling through the same system that I'm in, and you're really you're really intentional, and you apply so much purpose and effort toward things that you value and think are important, and you work so hard to like let people know about things. And one of the things that immediately made me feel safe with you and feel like camaraderie with you was your effort to reach out to what most people would refer to as like our side, you know, the of our political spectrum, like our team, and try to say like, hey, maybe we should stop like shitting on people who like make a mistake, or maybe we should stop trying to be the most righteous person on our side.
It's exhausting.
It's exhausting. And it's not like you recognize not only the emotional mistake that is inherent within that structure, but you also see the tactical mistake, right? Like our movement to make progress, we cannot be sacrificing, like taking out our own people. And we can't be looking at the other side as people who can't be our people. Like it just doesn't work. And that was so refreshing to me because it is hard to be a fallible person in a structure where people are presenting themselves as infallible, as like, you know.
And it's really scary and dangerous to be a tender, fragile person who is ready to admit they don't know everything.
Yeah.
In an arena where it's so judgmental and people have to have everything all figured out.
Right.
And if you slip up, nobody's going to come up to you quietly and be like, hey, you got something right here, just right here, just like right there. No, on the left. You know, people are going to like take screenshots and
sure.
like just rip you apart. And yeah. it's just a very weird. I think that in 10 years when, you know, the civilized world ends and we're all like holed up in the Oaks Mall, we're going to look back on this and realize like how weird this whole scenario was.
Yeah.
Where we were all online all the time and nobody ever went outside. And we don't know how to be people to other people anymore. And it's just, as somebody who was real, real deep in those lefty communities, it's just bonkers to me just how awful we are to each other and how we replicate the same systems that we supposedly are.
Yeah, it just doesn't add up.
Yeah, the more, like, the farther away from, like, radical left community and punk rock community that I get, and the more of, like, the older I get and the more of a normie that I become. Like, I wake up at 6:45. That's 6:45 for all of y'all following
for the layman.
And, like, do a workout. 2.5.
Hell yeah.
Which is, like, not Lexi Brown style.
It is now.
But it's like the more in like normie, you know, use a coupon at Publix territory that I get into, the more I'm just like, we are not trying to reach the most extreme, ideologically perfect person. Like the real work. Well, you know what? Maybe we are. Maybe that is someone else's work. And I think that what we're up against is so huge that I think it's going to take everybody doing everything. So I'm trying to always keep things in that light. But I think that true, like if anything is to change and break us out of this like totally like lock jaw state that we're in, it is to build community with regular ass people that are not cool, that are not PC, that, you know, if a hurricane comes and a tree falls on your house, your edgelord friends in some basement on the internet that are ideologically pure are not going to come running with a chainsaw. Like, maybe some of them will, and I really hope that they do. But, like, it's going to be your weird libertarian neighbor who, like, has a lot of guns, but also really likes you for whatever weird reason, because maybe he hasn't found out that you don't shave your armpits yet or something, you know? And like, he's going to be the guy that comes over and like helps you out. And I just feel like if you isolate every single person in your life, then you're not actually like making any progress.
I agree. And this is
I'm gonna get myself canceled. Did you see that?
That was like a pretty serious shit. Knuckle crack there. But I agree that like there, I think most people, as extreme as they might get on one side or the other, have loved ones in their lives who do not represent their side of things. So I know that it's possible to feel a connection with somebody who doesn't align perfectly with your politics. It seems a lot easier to marginalize people who are strangers and say, mm-hmm. like, well, you're just a bad person because A, B, and C. But like what, there are some like, our dog Lola is like so badly wanting to be in here. And Lexi's letting her in. Hello, sweet one. Hello, Lola. Hi. Hi, sweet one. Say hello to the crowd.
Hi.
Good girl.
Hi, baby. Oh, my God. Do you want some hummus? Come here. Yeah.
No, we're talking.
Oh, baby.
Good girl.
Yes. Okay.
You smell like a fish.
You smell like fish heads. Bye, Lola. Love you. That should become like a regular thing in Find a Way episodes. It's like the Lola entry.
We were talking moment. About politics.
Okay, back to seriousness. Actually, like Lola's a great example. Like we, when we got Lola, I'd had Took for, I think, let's see, he was probably like 8 or 9 when we got Lola. And for years I had Took by myself. And then, in my previous relationship, he had a mom in Jess and she was like the most loving mom ever. And then, you know, when that relationship ended, it was Took and me again. And then when I met Audrey, he had a new mom and she was loving toward him too. And he was just like he's was my best friend of all time. And you know this
we
better than
Took.
Most. Yes.
We're big fans of Took.
Took is just the greatest. And he did, he passed away, but before he passed away, we got Lola and Lola was not like anything like Took. she Took was super chill and like just wanted to snuggle with you and, you know, quiet, you know, and but very loving and very like connected. Lola was a spaz. Lola was all over the place. Just, you know, it couldn't have been more different from Took than anything.
Lola is like the first year UF student that is so grateful to find the CMC and to cancel everybody. And Took is Joe Quarter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Took is Joe. Yeah, and it's funny too because Took even like I remember when I first became aware of Joe, I remember being intimidated by him because like he looks like could be tough like and he is tough by the way, he's like super fucking tough, but not in the way that I thought looking at him.
Don't forget what you're about to say because I want to hear it. I just want 10 seconds
yeah.
that I was in a city commission meeting and Joe stood up in front of everybody, waited for like 2 hours to speak, and he spoke up for the oak tree that's across the street from Lucy's for them not to cut it down because trees are citizens too.
Yeah.
And like I was crying and I looked around and it wasn't like it wasn't some the vibe in the room was not some like, oh, the Lorax is going to come up here and like, you know, make a fool. It was like everybody was like, God, he's so right.
Yeah.
It was really powerful, actually.
Joe is a transformative citizen in this town.
He's like, so great.
And I think there are a lot of people in Gainesville who experience the effects that he has had on Gainesville without knowing that he's mm-hmm. part of the driving force.
And I think it's because he embodies that same spirit of like, if you're going to actually be in community with people, mm-hmm. you have to actually look them in the eye and be in community with them. You can't,
that's right.
you can't like wait to figure out what side they're on and then be like, oh, okay, well,
right.
you obviously haven't read, you know, the blah, 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 you know, you like, and yeah,
it's, I agree.
Community is supposed to be inclusive. It's not so open-minded that our head, like that our brains fall out, but it's, you know, I feel like it has to appeal to a mass audience or else we're not actually moving
we're not
the
doing
needle
it
or
right.
anything. Yeah.
With Joe, he just, when I remember being intimidated and then being delighted to sit and talk with him and realize like, this is this beautiful man mm-hmm. and he's kind and caring and really passionate. And
Joe loves community so much that he had a regular ass swimming pool that he let just go feral, and now alligators live in it.
Are you serious?
Because he liked the natural vibe more than he needed a swimming pool. He's got a really nice pool in his yard.
Yeah.
And it has been a pond for gators and frogs and native species. God. That to me, just like put a bow on that. That is, yeah. that's the vibe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's okay. So your comparison to my best friend Took is apt. I hope Joe recognizes how much respect I have. And, but case in point though, Lola coming in and like at first, you know, I was hesitant for us to adopt her, at first because I thought like it's going to disrupt our peace. It's going to disrupt this like wonderful existence that we've got with Took. And frankly, it did. It did disrupt it. It was mm-hmm. like, you know, a shift for us to make. But she's like, she's got the same baseline good in her that Took does. It just mm-hmm. shows up different. But she just, Lola wants to be loved. Lola wants to be safe. She wants to, she's anxious. She barks a lot because she gets overexcited and she just wants to, you know, like, and she's a good friend. She's a good family member. She's beautiful.
I wish everybody was a dog.
Well, and that's the thing though. I don't think it's not crazy to approach people like you do dogs. Like when you see a dog that barks a lot, there's a lot of people who have no patience for dogs. And I get it. Like everybody's got their own shit, right? But because I love dogs and I love cats and I love most animals, when you see them behaving in ways that goes against what is comfortable, my mind automatically comes up with excuses. Like, well, they're excited. Yeah. They're whatever. Or you just say like, they're a dog. Like they don't know.
Yeah.
They're not supposed to bark right now. And it occurs to me, I always feel so bad when people tell dogs to be quiet and when they tell dogs to stop barking or to be quiet or whatever it is, because like, that's to me, what I hear when they're barking is like, hi, hi. Hey, it's me. Hey, you're here. Oh my God. Hi. You know, and people are like, be quiet, you know, blah, blah, blah. Or when dogs are barking, they're like, I think there's someone outside. Is everybody okay? I think there's danger outside. There could be danger.
I had this moment just last night where I was like, I had drifted off to sleep at like 9 p.m., by the way, because I'm like 600 years old now. I went to bed at like 9:30 last night. And because it was still kind of light outside. Yeah. This is how bad it was. And I woke up a little bit. This is not every night. I'm really cool sometimes. Other
wicked,
nights.
Wicked cool.
I stay up really late. and I heard this rustling. And I know that there is a family of raccoons.
Okay.
And that there is also, like, other critters that live in the house. In the house. It depends on what season it is. But I was like, I had this panic feeling because I don't have my dog anymore to alert me
yeah.
that there's people outside. And I was like, oh shit, right. Now I'm just like, there's a part, there's like reptile part of my brain is always kind of like, who's that? Are we safe? Who's
yes.
that? Are
yeah.
we safe? That has never been activated because I've had a series of aggressive pit bulls my whole life
yeah.
to do that for me. And I remember thinking, oh, it's just an animal. As long as it's not a person, I'm okay.
Wow.
And just remembering how weird that is, yeah. because it's like, this is my own species. And yeah. I, like, basically any animal would be fine because it's predictable. It doesn't have any ill intention. And it can, like, it's not like it can't fuck shit up. If it was like a grizzly bear,
yeah.
like, it could do some serious damage. But I could trust that it doesn't have, you know, it's not trying to break into my house to find me.
Right.
You know, it's just after, like, the Snickers bars that I have in the freezer, which is, like, a totally transparent and understandable vibe to be on. But I just remember feeling that and then catching myself and thinking how strange that was. And also just, like, as humans, I think that we are accustomed to living in places long enough that we understand what is safe and what isn't. And
right.
I, you know, I felt really grateful to have been in my spot long enough that I was like, oh, that's just the raccoon family.
Right.
Or that's just the Siamese cat that has been, like, tramping about for the past 5 years or whatever.
I love that. I know exactly what you mean. And I think that, like, the people who, you know, if it was a person in your yard meaning you harm, I'm fine with not letting them being my community for now, you know, until, like, whatever they figure out their shit or whatever.
We haven't really worked all that out yet.
Well, that's because we have no system of, like, rehabilitation mm-hmm. in this country. Like, we have punishment and we don't have rehabilitation, and the system itself creates such self-hatred, and it creates such I feel as though we get gaslit so much that it kind of creates these outlandish responses to it, like hurting others and mm-hmm. like lashing out to others. And going all the way back to, you know, relying on, you know, a neighbor who doesn't line up perfectly with our politics, like, the underlying thing that does belong in our community is, like, that neighbor saying, I can help. Yeah. You know, do you need something? I'm here.
Well, and he's willing to do that because we have established a relationship.
Right.
You know, like, he knows me sort of. I know him sort of. And, yeah. like, we have been courteous enough to each other and, like, considered each other as humans, mm-hmm. like, who have, like, weird quirks and needs or whatever. But, like, we mostly leave each other alone and then, you know, be nosy in the right circumstances when it's like, hey, dude, are you okay?
Yeah.
You know. And I think that that's something that I feel like we're not, that muscle is not super exercised with people anymore, myself included.
Yeah.
Where we don't, it doesn't feel natural anymore to reach out. Like, it's more fear-based and it's more like, I could stop and help that person, but I don't really know. What if they're crazy?
Well, and I think that that's a bit of a mechanism of the system that we're in. I once heard, and so I have not confirmed this. I have not done the research to make sure this is true, but the analogy stands no matter what. But I once was told about what happens if you take a jar and you put black ants and red ants in the jar and you shut it and you just leave it. The two different species of ant, the two different kinds of ant will be pretty much fine. They won't, like, mess with each other. Mm. They won't, like, attack. But if you take the jar and you shake the jar, then they attack each other because the red ants think that it's the black ants' fault that the craziness happened.
Ain't
and vice
that a
versa.
Metaphor.
And that's what I think is really happening. Yeah, I think that that's what it feels like. That is what it feels like. Hello, folks. Quick editor's note. While it feels true, the reality of the experiment has been debunked. This experiment with putting black ants and red ants in a jar and shaking it up has been a long misattributed quote to Sir David Attenborough, who never said this. And as far as we know, this experiment has not been done before. According to most entomologists, Even ants that look alike can smell the difference between their colony and others, and if they do smell that difference, they are most likely going to be aggressive toward each other. So this one falls flat. My apologies for spreading misinformation. It is likely this concept originated from one of my favorite Kurt Vonnegut novels, Cat's Cradle. The quote is, "I can't remember what all Frank had fighting in the jar that day, but I can remember other bug fights we staged later on. One stag beetle against 100 red ants. One centipede against 3 spiders. Red ants against black ants. They won't fight unless you keep shaking the jar." And that's what Frank was doing. Shaking, shaking the jar. That's a great book. And I stand by the analogy nonetheless. It does feel as though we are pit against each other by our misattribution of blame toward people we consider to be others. So there's that for you. I'll stop talking now and allow Lexi and me to continue in our ignorance regarding the red and black ant jar experiment. Thank you. That's what it feels like. It's,
you could unite the black ants and the red ants in a class struggle to realize that someone else is shaking the jar and we're all in it together.
I agree. I do. and that's what's even more insidious about this system is that, like, saying that, there's already a system in place to say, like, you sound crazy. You sound like a conspiracy theorist.
That's why we're here, to give each other permission to sound crazy.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't think you sound crazy.
Your point on, like, you know, rehabilitation and restorative justice, this is just going to be a podcast about shout outs to Gainesville people, but
great.
I was canoeing once and we were talking about, what?
You said this is a podcast about shout outs. And then the next line was like, I was canoeing once. Yeah. And I was like, with who? Okay, here we go.
Something dramatic, which I will not get into, had happened. And it was like internet related and cancel related. And we were talking about this person who had just caused a lot of strife and just damaged a lot of relationships trying to be like ideologically pure. And I think that there were good intentions there. And at one point, Chelsea, who was the main kind of pariah of all of this, everybody's sort of dogging on this person to try to make Chelsea feel better. And I think there were maybe a couple of PBRs involved, but Chelsea stands up in the canoe and kind of awkwardly is like, because everyone's like, I hope this person moves away. I hope this, you know, like, they're not saying evil things, but like, they're basically just like, we don't want to deal with this person anymore. And Chelsea is just like, I hope they fall in love. Mm. Like, I hope something so good happens to them that they forget that they have to like toe this party line.
Wow.
And it was just such a like, it was just such a loving moment of just like, we have to, I don't know, I feel like we have to have that energy of like, not, maybe not people that have hurt us, but just this like, I hope it can happen over there, but I hope that this person gets what they need.
I agree.
So that they stop being a menace.
Right. And the thing about that mentality, which first of all, I just absolutely love that. And I can totally see Chelsea doing that. Mm-hmm. Like, Chelsea's such a, it seems, I don't know Chelsea super
well. We're going to have to start
well,
tagging
but
all these people. Can you tag people in a podcast?
I don't know. I don't think, I'm not sure. But as far as I know, Chelsea, that like seems to line right up with her mentality. But like, not only is that emotionally satisfying to hear, but again, it goes back to like, that is logical.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, I think so often those kinds of responses get like, oh, well, wouldn't that be nice? Or like wishful thinking. But the reality of it is that, yes, like that is what shifts people. Like, it's not a coincidence that so many misogynists loosen up when they have a child.
Or when they get laid.
or when they get laid, sure. But like, you know, there's this like stereotype of guys who like have a daughter and all of a sudden they're like, oh, well, you know, maybe women do deserve rights. You know, like that doesn't make them bad people. It makes them inexperienced people. It makes them like they have had a life so far that has not introduced them to an experience that woke them up. Yeah. And for some reason, you know, you and I and our friends, many of our friends, most of our friends, we've gotten experiences that wake us up to those things. And I bet you within all of us, there's a bunch of like random positions and philosophies that we might not have been turned around to yet. And like, we're going to need our community to help us get there or whatever it is. But the answer to it isn't to punish them for not knowing it yet. The answer, it's the same thing. I had this like wild moment. It's not wild. I had this like eye-opening moment when I was teaching in a public school, and we were at, I was at lunch with my other teachers, and there was a teacher there who I do not, like I did not feel connected to in almost any way. And she was talking about her history class, and she was making fun of some of her students for not knowing who Abraham Lincoln is. As she was like joking about it, and a lot of people were laughing about it, like, oh, like these kids today, like how do they not know this? I just said to her, like, isn't your class Civil War? Like,
isn't your job to teach them?
Right. Well, like, isn't this the time when you learn about that stuff? Like, isn't this is when you learn about the Civil War? This is when you learn about Abraham Lincoln. Sure, they know, like, they might know the guy on the back of the penny or the $5 bill, but like, this is the time when they're supposed to learn about it, right? Like, are you seriously making fun of them for not knowing it yet? This is your job. This is like, I can't sit and make fun of kids for not knowing where the commas go. That's my job. I'm their English teacher.
I don't know. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I think I disagree. I think that like this idea that the left has that the right just doesn't know yet. I think it's just, I'm not saying that you're gross. I think that it's kind of gross. It's a gross premise.
No, it's, I get it.
But it's like, it's very present. It's very ubiquitous on the left. And I think that I think it's holding us back. And I think that if we could see these people as like, what is it that they care about? Like, where is all of this coming from? And there's plenty of people who have fucked up ideas about women and they have a daughter and then it just reinforces all of their fucked up ideas.
Totally, you're
right. And I don't think it's that like they just don't have enough exposure to like Adrienne Murray Brown. I think it's like, it's just that whatever has happened to them has put their guard up so much that they can't let in.
That's what I mean.
The idea, you know?
And to be clear, like I am not,
I'm not trying to attack you on your own.
Oh, no. That's the point of this. No, seriously. I like one of my main, well, I don't know. I have a lot of main desires with this, but like I do want pushback and I do want like when I bring up stuff like this, I want somebody to challenge me on it, especially if I'm wrong. But I do want to make sure like I'm not excusing people for not having empathy or for whatever it is. What I'm saying is like I think that there is like taking emotion out of it. I think that there is a plus B equals C explanation for why people have a lack of empathy or totally. People have a lack of understanding or whatever it is. Like you're right. Like they have like the people who disagree with us politically or philosophically or whatever it is, they have been exposed to mostly the same world that we have been, right? But there is an equation for like what established their value system. What established their safety within their community, whatever it like, it is insane for us to assume that like to take it out of like current politics, like let's take like generational politics. You know, like my grandparents, Like my grandfather, he grew up with in a community that was not polite toward people of different races, right? And if he displayed signs of kindness toward them, it is not the same. It was not the same situation as it is today,
yeah.
Right? It was a challenge to his community. It was a challenge to his acceptance to a group of people, right? That is a way bigger risk. I'm not saying that it's right. It's not right. It's wrong. Mm-hmm. Ideally, you would say, you people are cruel and I don't want to be accepted by you. I want to be accepted by people who are kind and loving. And this isn't kind and loving. It's easy to see it's not. But in a mathematical equation of chance, it's different. The yeah. numbers are different.
Yeah.
And so like, it's, I think that that still exists today. Like people who are a part of a community that like drives them in this direction, it takes more to go back against it.
Totally.
But it should still happen, okay. You know, like it. And unfortunately, I'll go back to blaming like the system that we're inserted into doesn't really allow for the freedom to just like break off and to say, you know, like, I'm going to join this other group.
And I think it goes back to vulnerability
yeah.
and safety and permission. And
yes.
I think that, like, in this world where everything is on the internet and everything is happening under the scrutiny of your people that agree with you and your people that don't, like, other people that don't agree with you, it is really difficult to change your mind mm-hmm. and to, like, I've learned from that and yeah. now I'm different because people have screenshots that they've saved of like the
That's
when
right.
you were not different or whatever. And I think it's all, I mean, I think everything is unprocessed grief on all sides,
mm-hmm.
but I think that grief is such a crucible that like presents you with a choice to change or not change. And it's not this binary, but like for the sake of argument, you can either double down on yeah. the shit that feels safe and like, you know, everyone in my gated community or everyone around me that is social norming for me
yeah.
is reinforcing me being this kind of person. Or you can like open yourself up to, holy shit, I have just lost this thing, gone through this thing, I'm dealing with this thing. And allow yourself to be vulnerable and see what comes up
sure.
and see who is there and just be open to like, well, I don't, it's just, it's the wildest thing to be in like fresh, deep grief and see who shows up.
Yeah.
I think this is like episode 3, I think we're getting into, so I have a lot to say about that too, but it's just like, it is such a lightning rod and it's, people do not know how to deal with being uncomfortable. They don't know how to deal with being confronted yeah. or having their beliefs challenged. And in so many situations, it is so much safer and easier to just like retreat into what you know. And I mean, people on the left do it all the time.
Of course, yeah.
Like just when they're confronted by like a regular ass working person who talks like a normal human being and not like some weird think piece, you know, like they don't, like, we don't know how to respond because we can't be vulnerable and we can't say, huh, wow, you've got a good point and I'm a human being and you're a human being, and as human beings like that have to be in line at Publix together one day, like, you know.
Yeah, well, and the cruelty is there just like it is on the other side.
Totally.
like you know,
It's so much easier to be cruel and to like dunk somebody.
Yeah. Like look at this woman. Yeah. I can't remember what her name is. The Olympics breakdancer.
Oh, yeah. This is now a pop culture podcast.
Right. Yes. But I'm having such a hard time with this. Like I had, I think, the similar experience that most people did
yeah.
watching the dance and just being like, I don't think that's like, actually the first time I saw it, I didn't understand the context
mm-hmm.
and I didn't even know that breakdancing was a part of the Olympics.
Yeah.
And so
what a time to be alive.
And that was part of my experience, was just like, what is going on? This is a thing. And watching this person dance, my initial reaction was like, I don't think that that's very good. Like, is this person like a gold medal winner or something? Like, I didn't know. And then slowly realizing like, oh, this person's getting ridiculed. This person is like really, and there is, it seems to be universal, like as far as politics go, like I don't, you know, it's like the right and the left are both just like reveling in this person's passion. This person, and I don't know a lot about the person. I haven't done any research or anything like that, but what I've gathered is I think that they like teach breakdancing.
They have like a PhD in breakdancing.
Right. You know? And it's like that because she doesn't appear the way that like liberals want a breakdancer to appear, because I don't know what it is. There's a million things. Like it is like this, like the water has been chummed and like everybody is just having a feeding frenzy on it. And all I can think about is like, and again, maybe this is going to bite me in the ass because maybe this person's a bad, like a horrible person. And she's like, you know, I have no idea. But to me on the surface, what I've learned so far is it just seems like this person is like super into breakdancing.
It's permission and it's yes and energy, but it's also like, somebody should not have let her into the Olympics.
And you know what? Maybe people should be allowed to laugh at a person who does it. That's totally fine. All I mean is that like, we cannot like our political movement cannot claim the high ground when we're so quick to jump on the cruelty train, you know, I don't know. Like I honestly, even though it sounds corny, I am of the belief that like, if you love that thing so much and you try out to be on your country's Olympic team and you get on, you have the right to be there and to do your thing. And when it's something that is like subjective as dancing, it's just hard to get behind somebody saying like, that's not breakdancing, you know, like,
well, I don't think that it's her fault that like the breakdancing like finalists at the Olympics were mostly white, you know, like I think that that is a systemic
thing. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, historically not a white sport.
This is true.
But so I think that's the issue that people are having. But this is really teasing out that they're like, everybody on both sides is dunking on this person who is just like a fucking dork for what she loves.
Yeah.
And like, that's you and I's whole MO is like, be a dork for the thing that you love.
Yeah.
And like, maybe she should not have gained access to this like elite arena or like even this like kind of elite sport that I feel like gatekeeping can be helpful sometimes. Like, you know,
no, I don't know.
I feel like having a PhD in a thing is not the same as like being of a culture and like going to this international stage where you represent a culture. But that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. I don't think it's fair to dunk on somebody who is just very passionate about something.
Well, and
I will say that the memes are incredible.
They're incredible. Oh,
we're
right
off the rails.
No, but here's what I was going to say. I think it, like, we could come at this and say like, we shouldn't be cruel and we should stop doing this and like take the moral high ground. That's fine. But I don't think it's realistic, right? I think the best thing that we can take from this is to recognize like, oh, cruelty's in all of us. Mm-hmm. We're all cruel. Like, and again, I think that that is a product of somebody shaking the jar.
Totally.
Like, I don't think we would be cruel like this if we lived in a different system, if we lived in a world where like where community was emphasized more than productivity, where, you know, like, I think a lot of people point toward quote unquote progress, technological progress. It's like, you know, capitalism drives innovation and all this stuff. And I think there's an argument to be made, like, some of this stuff sucks. Like, some of this, like, innovation doesn't enhance life. Like, email doesn't make my life better. You know, it does in some ways, but I think the net positive is net negative, you know? Mm-hmm. And, like, whatever you want to point at, like, I don't think, I think progress for progress's sake is a misguided mechanism or a misguided compass, you know. I think community for community's sake will find progress in the ways that we need progress. You know, we can get to the moon without needing to do it to make money. We can get to the moon because we're like curious, you know. We've already made it to the moon.
I do think sometimes things don't have to get that bad, but when things get that bad, the shaking of the jar can bring out things in people that might not have. I don't think that the Olympics would have been so overtly like flamboyant if we hadn't been in this moment in time where France had just like narrowly defeated a super right wing person. And you know, you look at the political climate that we're living in now in the South, where it's like it's the fucking gayest it's ever been. Mm-hmm. It rules so hard, and it's also, you know, the most
scary,
like,
time.
Scary, dangerous. Yeah. Like, and I don't think those two things are in a vacuum from each other.
No.
And so I think that like there is this, and you know, I've said a lot of unfair things about like the radical scene tonight, but
do you think they've been unfair?
I mean, you know, I'm
challenging.
I think
things.
I'm speaking from a place of trauma, but I think that like there is something so beautiful about when shit gets hard. Our people, like, I don't really know what I mean by our, but like my people are like people like in the cracks in the sidewalk and like the queers and the freaks and the artists, like, yes. We kind of just get weirder.
Yeah.
And we get louder about it. Mm-hmm. And like, it makes us targets for sure. But like, you know, we get more out there the more that things get stirred up, and it's terrifying. Yeah. And as somebody who wants to, like, I more and more I look around and realize that I'm like a scene elder, which is very disorienting, but I just want to like wrap my arms around everybody and like protect them all. And like, it's, I'm so fucking proud of people for just like in this moment in time where everything is so scary, for just being like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Like I was kind of like baby into this thing. And now like, I'm going to be the biggest fucking freak you've ever seen, because you can't do this. You can't like legislate this out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And that part feels hopeful in a weird way. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, that's what fuels my hope too.
Yeah.
It's just seeing people like you said, get louder, get weirder. And having places to do that, like Gainesville is a pretty good place for doing that. It's not perfect, but I do think that we're like, I'm constantly amazed by our response to stuff like this, or to response to like supporting or like rallying, or even like the last show and tell we had, you know, like one of the first stories that came up was somebody talking, we were talking about birthday experiences, mm-hmm. and somebody shared a story where she nearly got assaulted on her birthday. And I remember as she started telling the story, it's the first episode in a couple months. And I thought like, oh God, you know, this sounds like it's going to a dark place. And there was like a split second where I thought like, oh no, you know, like I hope the vibe's okay in here. You know, this is the first story. And immediately, like before she even got to the part that I knew was coming, I thought like, no way, this crowd is like, yeah, so ready for this. This is what we're here for, mm-hmm. is to share. And she got there and she talked about the moment that almost got worse and it didn't. And then, you know, she ended it by saying like, yeah, fuck that guy. And what does the crowd do? Like in unison, we all like, yeah, fuck that guy.
So good.
And like, I could have cried in that moment.
And I don't think like, because a part of me wants to be like, you can trust people with grief and with heavy shit. I really do believe that on some level, but like mob mentality is real. And like, you know, you look at the right and it's like, it's all of the classic like feeling isolated from community and wanting to belong and like desperate to fit in. And it just like sucks all of this, like, and it's not even those people, because we all do it too.
Right.
And, but it's, I don't know, it's, I think when there is permission to be vulnerable, you can trust people with each other and with each other's emotions. When you first started doing Show and Tell, I was like, I felt like the first few episodes that I was at, I was like kind of constantly bracing myself where somebody that I didn't know would get up to the mic and I'd be like, oh God, are they, it's gonna get weird.
Yeah, totally.
And I think it only happened like once where it just sort of went off the rails. But like you can trust the group with vulnerability. There is something about, this is what it is. There is something about somebody standing up and unflinchingly, maybe they're nervous, but being vulnerable and saying, this is me, this is my story,
yep.
This is an authentic nugget that I am presenting in front of you, and here it is.
Yep.
And like, it is really difficult to be a dragon in a dragon's lair in that moment, you know, when you see somebody being like, here's who I am.
Yeah.
It is really hard to be like, oh, wow. be a lot cooler if you weren't, you know, like... It's, I don't think that like essentially human beings are wired to like, it's disarming to have somebody be unabashedly or abashedly vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I think that that in that sense, it's superpower. And I think that we need more of that on both sides if we're ever going to have any kind of way out of this moment in time that we're in.
I agree.
And because you can't build community when you have so many walls and so many rules. And like a mold for how people need to behave in order to be granted access into your community, as if it's like the be all end all.
That's why I think you and I both share a, we both share a reluctance or maybe like a wariness of the nature of cancellation in our movement, because I feel like it's the greatest threat to our greatest strength, right? Our, what I consider to be the side that I'm on, I think we're strongest because we are willing to be vulnerable. We're willing to recognize like each other's flaws and things like that. If that gets taken away from this movement, then I think it becomes the thing that we're fighting. It becomes the exclusionary, you know?
Yeah.
We have a good thing. And it's your people's passion for equality and people's passion for justice is good, and it comes from a good place. And when it turns into this like, this, you know, I don't even know what it is, like decimation mentality, like, you know, take them out once they turn the wrong way. It's not going to work. You know? And
I feel like the number of instances where that actually happens is really low, but it's so traumatizing that people are so afraid of it.
Yeah.
And that's what keeps them silent.
It's another distortion of the way that we're presented reality through media. It's like we see these extremes. That's what I'm talking, especially with my parents' generation, like who are the boomers, which I resist even saying baby boomers because like it's got this like connotation to it. But like people from that generation, and I'm not even talking about my parents, but a lot of people from that generation, they get their understanding of what cancel culture is like from like their news station that they watch, you know, they were like Bill Maher or something like that. And it's like, that's not what it is. They're talking about like these rare things that happen that have become newsworthy. Yeah.
We're not talking about like kicking an abuser out of a safe space. We're talking about like grandma didn't use the right terms.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I love about Audrey's parents and Audrey's aunt in particular. Not, you know, there's a lot of people who do this, but they have such a great mentality for trying to, like, they'll come to us and say like, hey, this thing is happening and I'm not sure if I understand it. And I think it's because like we were raised differently and like, I want to make sure that I'm like understanding fully. Can you explain A, B, and C? And they'll, you know, sometimes they might say like, well, wait a minute, what about whatever? And they'll, maybe they'll say something that is like a trigger normally for a lot of people. But because it's a safe space, they can express it and saying like, well, what I'm feeling is this thing. And we'll say, oh yeah, I get that. You know, that's actually a common response, but consider this perspective. And when we do it, they're like, oh, I see, you know, like, and they have us, and I'm sure they have other people too, but like they have us in their lives as a safe space to try these things out and to say like, I'm not sure if I agree with this, or I'm not sure if I get this. And everybody should have that. Everybody needs to have that safe space. And unfortunately they don't. And so then somebody messes up and they do it in a forum that is like widely viewed. And there just doesn't seem to be any mechanism in place to like usher them toward understanding. Instead they get rejected. And what are they going to do if they get rejected?
They're just going to be bitter and angry.
Yeah. You know, and like, can you blame them? If you were in their shoes, you would feel bitter and angry. And sure, with this kind of response system, it's only a matter of time before you mess up too, you know? Yeah. And that's just a horrible thought.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think that there is a place for being careful about or intentional about our language. I also just like, I just want people to be real with each other. Like, this is not how... This is not even English. Like the terms that you guys are using, it's like, if you're not online 25 hours a day.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
you're not aware of those terms.
And, but there's a difference between being like morally impeccable and, you know, being totally oblivious and willfully oblivious.
Sure.
But yeah. I don't know.
Well, and that's the thing too, is that I think there's a misrepresentation of the response to some of these things. Like I hear like one common thing is like fear over using the wrong pronoun for somebody.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, I don't want them to freak out at me. I don't want them to yell at me. Like I look at this person and I think I know their gender and I say the wrong thing and I don't want to, you know, and my response, because I know transgender people, my response is like, I don't know a lot of transgender people who freak out when you get the pronoun wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The people I know say like, oh, actually my pronoun is this.
Well, and I think that is the fear of, that is like an awareness that there is no safe space for vulnerability.
Right.
And for fucking it up.
Right.
And I think that we all need to get better at fucking up,
mm-hmm,
and how to recover without making it weird. And we all need to get better about being around people who are fucking up and having a little bit of grace with them.
Exactly.
Like somebody who has no interest in changing, that's a little different. But like somebody who's genuinely just not up on, you know, what the right way to be is.
Yeah.
I think it's different.
Agreed.
Yeah. We're definitely getting canceled.
Bring it on. No, I'm not bringing it on. Be merciful. Just love me. I'm trying so hard.
I don't know, man. I just like, the apocalypse is coming so soon and I'm just so impatient for people to get their shit together and just be real fucking human beings to each other.
I think about
how many stupid meetings I've sat in that had like a list of rules and like everybody was like trying to, you know, they were taking the stack and making sure that like different voices were prioritized. And it was just like, everybody was trying so hard to do things the most equal way. And then going to like another meeting in particular that I'm thinking of, that was run by like an older Black woman who had lived in town forever and had been done organizing forever. And it was just like, you, like people showed up, they were who they were, there was food, it wasn't vegan, so sorry, we didn't think about it. And it was just like, people showed up and like the work was not like talking about politics or strategy, the work was like moving chairs and like making a spreadsheet and, you know, whoever happened to show up and what do you have, how can we use it? And that was really powerful to me.
Yeah.
But
I think your instinct that you mentioned in the very beginning of like creating small communities and like being intentional about the way that you create them and like the atmosphere that's in them, I think is probably the only way forward with it. It's like, it's nice to think about changing everybody all at once.
Yeah. This idea that we have to change people, I think we need to change that idea. I think we really need to challenge that idea.
Okay.
Of like, I am right.
Yeah.
I've read all of the right things and I know that I'm doing things the way that, if everybody just did it the way that I did, we wouldn't have a problem. And like, I mean, I kind of do feel that way, but.
Well, I think everybody does.
But that's the thing.
Yeah.
I just feel like we need to have a little bit more grace for each other, but also community is not the people that you choose. That's the whole point.
That's the whole point.
The entire point is that
I think you get pushback on that.
It's the people that are annoying and it's the people that you really don't like. Everybody counts in a community and you have to just deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you deal with it is that is culture. And that it, like, that's why people talking to come full circle on this 4-hour podcast. That's why people used to get together and sing in the first place, is because it was binding in a community. And like, you know, home dude over here that said something stupid and ignorant about your mom is going to be at the, you know, whatever, the dinner party later, and y'all need to be able to look each other in the eye. You don't have to be best friends. Community is not, we need to all be like kumbaya with each other, but like, I don't know.
Well, and determining whether or not a person is a good or bad person doesn't have to do with them agreeing with you.
Yeah, a community needs to have room in it for all the good people and like most of the bad people, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. And that, well, is, and whether like or not the there really is a such thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Like, yeah. I want to be, my goal, I feel like, is to be like quirky enough that my neighbors like me, but like, but that would still like call the fire department if my house was on fire, but like not so likable that they'll come over unannounced.
This is a pretty specific persona that you're creating.
Well, it's very carefully crafted. I'm trying to be just the right amount of crazy to be a little off-putting, but still kind of like, you know, fun at parties.
I think like maybe the ultimate for me, and I could be wrong on this, but I feel like the ultimate for you is going to be like the adults on the street like know and appreciate you, yeah, and respect you, and the kids on the street dare each other to go up onto, yes, your property and like knock on the door and then run.
Yeah.
Right.
And it'll be scary, but I'll give them a freezy pop.
See? Yeah. And, yeah, and like the one kid who's brave enough to knock and stay,
yeah,
you're going to like give that little treat.
Yeah.
And they're going to be like, and you're going to be like, tell no
and
one.
And they'll be like, God, we can't figure her out.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'd be so good.
Yeah.
And that is community. Every community has a weird witch next door.
We have just found Lexi's way.
Oh, God.
Thank you for doing this. I can't think of a better
Please
way to...
Please don't use all of this.
Are you kidding me?
No. Yes. No. What?
Oh, man. This is... It's too late. It's there. I just posted it.
What did we find a way to?
I found a way to, like, really enjoy my time tonight. And I also, I mean, I hope we do this a lot of times. I hope, like, if you like it, you know, maybe this is, like, the worst
We've
experience.
Got enough material for, like, a lot of
Because we didn't even get into your grief stuff, which, like, is a whole thing.
It is such a whole thing.
And it happens to be another thing that, like, I very much agree with you on.
Spoiler alert, the dog always dies in the end. Just a preview.
It's true. We share this trauma that like is beautiful. I love you. Thank you.
I love you so much.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm very grateful that we are the friends that we are.
I feel like there were a lot of things happening when you kind of came closer into my orbit, but I feel like I'm in my permission era, and I feel like that really started because of you and because of Show and Tell. And I see you bring that out in people all the time.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for doing that.
I don't feel as like I feel like I could just kind of say the same thing back to you. seriously, like I was saying before with Show and Tell, when I started it, I was excited about it, but I didn't necessarily feel as though I was still looking for some sort of permission to do it, and I was still looking for some sort of buy-in. And when you started showing up prepared, when you started showing up with like a thing in mind, and when you would like text me ahead of time and like, yeah, you would bring props, you would bring in songs, you would text me like a couple days ahead of time being like, hey, where's the post? You know, like what's the theme? You know,
I
all this.
I need it. I need that energy in my life. So many people do, I think.
I can't tell you though, like forget like show and tell as an entity by itself, just that like something that I put effort into was supported that way.
Yeah.
Meant more to me than I just can't.
I love you a lot, but it wasn't about you. I know, like the idea of it is just so powerful. And like, to me, the most, like one of the most powerful things that has maybe ever happened to me is that we were doing show and tell, and it was maybe the third episode. So it was like, nobody really knew what it was yet. You didn't know what it was yet. And this lady, this couple came in off the street that were just walking by, and you didn't have some obscure name for it. It's literally called show and tell. And when people ask what it is, you can just be like, oh, it's show and tell.
Right.
And this woman got up and told that story about the purse. And yep. She was like, oh yeah, my grandma like makes purses and da 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 da. And she just got it. And like I have never, ever been in, I have felt really protected by community my entire adolescence. And it's really shielded me from a lot of probably bad shit. But I have never really, we've always kind of had this like chip on our shoulder about like, we're not them and they're not allowed in our like cozy little like hot tub or whatever. And to have like a woman off the street that was just some like normie rando woman walk up and feel fucking permission to stand up in front of a bunch of people who could have judged her and been like, this is our club, you're not allowed.
Yeah.
And to have her story heard and welcomed and then yes anded, that was so powerful to me, because I've never had that energy in my life. That feels like maybe a normal thing for normal people who weren't traumatized by some subculture. It was just so powerful to me, and to just like creating a space and trusting that like anybody can come into it and have a moment, because we're not really all that different.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that you see that. I appreciate that you like cherish that as much.
Big fan.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Love you.
Love you. Well, that's it, folks. That's my conversation with the one and only Lexi Braun. Lexi will return, thankfully. In the meantime, I'm going to leave you with one of Lexi's songs, The Moon. But before I do, I would like to remind you to get down to the Hippodrome to see Lexi's art on display through Art Walk starting today, Tuesday, September 10th. Lexi has an incredibly powerful voice that is displayed beautifully in her art. It deserves to be seen, it deserves to be heard, and you owe it to yourself to feel it. So please get down there and see it. Join us next Tuesday. Our guest on Find a Way will be Jenna Horner, another incredible artist. We have a wonderful conversation that is worth your time and mine and Jenna's. So please make it down for that conversation. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for all your support. It means the world to me. I am officially in love with this podcast. I'm thinking about it all the time. I can tell that I'm talking about it too much with my friends. They're probably tired of hearing about it, but I'm jazzed. So thank you so much for your support. Thank you for being here, and thank you for any kind of help you're doing to help us be more successful. Like I said, like I promised, I'm going to leave you with Lexi's song, The Moon. I'd like to share with you one of my favorite lyrics from the song. What's inside the fucking moon? Does it fear the things I do? Is there gold up in the moon? When they send drills up there to mine for pretty rocks, I hope they find a bloody heart inside the moon, softly beating against the walls of its room. Thank you, Lexi. Listeners, remember, as per Sterling's wisdom, listen to yourself as you listen. Thank you and enjoy.
Does it?